You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Sometimes the universe just works in incredible ways. This is, I believe we've had this on the schedule two previous days before we both had to move things around because things popped up. But we meet here today, Monday, January 27th. It's because the universe was just waiting for this new MicroStrategy preferred stock offering to hit the market. big day to be speaking with you, Jeff.
Absolutely. I mean, so many things going on. This is it's one of the most exciting equities in all of finance. And I think this is the biggest story in all of financial history. So yeah, exciting day to be chatting.
Well, before we jump into the preferred stock offering, why do you believe that the most exciting time, yeah, most exciting equity?
I think it's the most exciting equity in all of finance, because there's never been a situation quite like it. I don't think there's ever been there's never been a company that has completely shifted their treasury to a different commodity, right? All of most of finance as we know it, or most of the equity market as we know it, has a fiat treasury strategy. And now we have a completely new commodity, the best money the world has ever seen, the best collateral the world has ever seen, being used as the foundational commodity for a treasury strategy. So it's a completely new paradigm shift, and the world is all trying to figure out how to value the company in real time. And there's tons of arguments on both sides, and it's just incredibly exciting.
It does piss off a lot of people, particularly particularly the All-In podcast guys.
Bewilderment is the term that I use, where folks are confused. They haven't conceptualized Bitcoin completely. They don't understand the technological value of Bitcoin. And it's most of the folks that don't like it are bewildered, in my opinion.
I would agree. And we can jump into the fine details of how they're bewildered later in the discussion. But I do want to focus on this preferred stock offering, because it is a new sort of vehicle that MicroStrategy will be offering the public markets and investors who want to get access to the volatility trade that their debt instruments provide. This is a bit of a twist, and I just read a post from Dylan LeClaire that he posted at the beginning of the year in anticipation for this, because I think MicroStrategy teased it in one of their latest shareholder meetings. And today Michael Saylor took to Twitter and Business Wire to announce that they were doing this preferred stock offering. So I think starting from first principles, what is this offering? What is a preferred stock, and how does it play into the other offerings they've done, whether that's at the market raises for equity or the convertible notes they've been issuing as well?
Yeah. And I'm still trying to digest this at the same time you are, and the rest of the market is as well. Ultimately, what MicroStrategy is doing is tapping different capital pools to provide different products that have a different risk return metric with exposure to Bitcoin, right? You've got the convertible debt market, you've got the ATM equity issuances, you've got the options market on MicroStrategy, and this preferred stock issuance has a slightly different structure and design than the convertible debt. While it may seem similar optically from the get-go, it is effectively a perpetual call option on MicroStrategy shares with no expiration date and a dividend payment of target 8%. So it fits a different capital pool that is interested in getting this type of exposure without a definite horizon, like the convertible debt offering, and also getting that dividend component, that 8% dividend in perpetuity. So it's interesting to me that there are two separate stocks, right? I think this one is called Strike. So it's going to be a separate equity that's tradable in public markets that they also have the ability to use an ATM to issue additional preferred stock whenever they want to generate more capital to buy Bitcoin behind that strategy as well. So it's almost like establishing another vehicle where you can use the same strategy that you're already running with MicroStrategy equity.
And so it's a preferred stock offering. And I think for people who are listening or unaware of the different sort of classifications of stock, preferred as opposed to common, which is if you're on Robinhood, you're buying MSTR, you're buying common shares. I guess this preferred stock offering comes with benefits. The dividend, as you mentioned, preferred stock buyers will get access to the dividend before common shares. And if there's enough dividend to go around, the common shareholders will then get it. In terms of it basically determines the who gets what on the capital stack first. And so preferred stockholders go before common share in terms of the benefits that you get. The preferred is going to reap those benefits first before common. So that's a little cherry on top for people buying this. And then I think the other caveat here is that these preferred stockholders don't have voting rights either. So that right. is interesting from the MicroStrategy perspective, where they can still control a lot of the decisions that are made for strategy moving forward.
Yeah. So when you think about the convertible debt, it's senior, right? It's the closest. If there was bankruptcy proceedings or whatever, the senior debt would be in line first to get any of the assets. And then it would be the preferred stock. And then it would be the common equity holder at the end. So to your point, there is like levels of who sits where and the voting rights associated with each one of those, which is valuable to think about just kind of corporate business structure.
Yeah. And it's really interesting that they're doing this and this perpetual call option that you described too, because the whole strategy has been, and it seems like they've really honed in on it in the last 2 years, and why you've been maniacally focused on MicroStrategy for as long as you have, is the unlock of there's a pools of capital out there that can't access Bitcoin directly, but they like Bitcoin's volatility. And these vehicles where it's a convertible note, now the preferred stock offering create those avenues for these pools of capital with very strict mandates to get access to Bitcoin's volatility.
And I think the whole world is really starting to figure out how to trade these equities and the volatility associated with them. And one thing that's particularly interesting to me with MicroStrategy stock is that effectively, in my opinion, what Saylor is doing is making this stock incredibly hard to value on purpose, by design. He's like making it chaotic because there are so many people that can trade this on all sides of it, right? You've got equity holders that are going long. You've got these convertible bond buyers that are arbing the volatility in both directions. You've got people shorting it. You've got people buying long call options. And the fact that there is this volatility has made it incredibly appealing to a lot of different parties that are interested in speculating and movement in one specific direction or not. And you even see this, how popular this is in the markets. When you look at the total publicly traded volume daily, MicroStrategy for the last 51 days in a row has been a top 10 publicly traded equity by volume. And most of those days, it's top five. And this company is ranked, 130th by market cap. Yet they're trading with the big boys up in the top five because of the volatility associated with it.
And the result, that's the question I have too. And we get back to the bewilderment of many people in the incumbent TradFi space and venture capitalist space. But I think that was the big thing that really was a shot across the bow for people who weren't paying attention, was the investor presentation that Michael gave last year that had the returns of the convertible notes on the slide, and basically said this is the best performing debt instrument in public markets right now. And I think that's the question in many people's mind is, can that persist? Like, is there enough appetite for this? Can you repeat what has been executed on over the last few years moving forward? Where does this stop?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's just getting started, in my opinion. I mean, there are so many things that can play out, and the macro landscape has a really big impact on what the future will look like. But if you just look at MicroStrategy's balance sheet, right, they've got, as of today, Bitcoin's at, what, about 99,000. So the assets that MicroStrategy holds on their balance sheet's about $45 billion, and the amount of debt that they hold on the balance sheet's about $6.5 billion. Of that $6.5 billion, $3 billion is already in the money, effectively trading as equity, as long as the price of MicroStrategy doesn't fall below $225. So you can effectively think that the debt held on balance sheet is about $3.5 billion. So when you run that math, right, you've got $45 billion of assets and you've got $3 billion of liabilities. You're talking about a 7% leverage ratio with the ability to leverage up your balance sheet significantly while still being incredibly healthy and within historical kind of leverage ratios. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see $10 billion of convertible debt issued within Q1 or Q2 that leverages up the balance sheet and allows MicroStrategy to buy more Bitcoin here in the really near future. So when you look at this $42 billion capital plan split out between two pieces, right? $21 billion of the ATM and $21 billion of convertible debt. There's about $4.5 billion left of the ATM, and there's about $18 billion left of the convertible debt. And in retrospect, looking back at how this has been designed and how they've used a lot of the ATM up front, it, to me, is a bit of a no-brainer, because that's permanent capital that you're holding on your balance sheet that has no claim to it. Right, there's no debt associated with it. There's no liability claim on that specific capital. And as you raise additional capital from the convertible bond market or the debt market or the preferred share market, that capital that's raised, while it's unsecured, it impacts the leverage of the company. But you think about bringing $10 billion of capital in, that's going to push the Bitcoin price up. Right? Like, if they're buying $10 billion worth of Bitcoin, that's going to push the price of Bitcoin up, which is going to effectively probably maintain their leverage ratio, even though they're taking on more debt. Because as you push the price of the Bitcoin up with the convertible debt, the the underlying Bitcoin that you hold on your balance sheet is also going up. So your leverage ratio may result as unchanged, right? They may have significant future capacity to put more debt on their balance sheet. So that's one component of it. Two, the other question is the market there? And I think that, looking at this recent political, administration and the changes in the political landscape for digital assets moving forward into the next 4 years, I think it's incredibly likely that we see other companies, 10, 15, 20, that start to run a very similar type of strategy because of the proof of concept that MicroStrategy has put out there. So I think this market's going to expand, especially as, other people that are holding these other instruments start to recognize what's going on in the landscape in the marketplace.
What's up, freaks? This is Nat. You don't want to skip because Fold has a great offer for you. Everyone knows about Fold, the app where you can earn the most Bitcoin rewards for everyday purchases. I did this yesterday. Me and my wife, we use Amazon to buy quite a few things. And instead of just putting our credit card into Amazon and buying there, I put my credit card into Fold and buy an Amazon gift card and upload it to Amazon. Why? Because I get the credit card points and then I get sats back. Yesterday, I bought a gift card. I made 10,181 sats, about $10.50 in Bitcoin. And it's the only way to do it. If you want to stack Bitcoin passively, make sure you're using Fold gift cards. Fold has a special deal. I mentioned it earlier. If you're not shopping with Fold gift cards, you're leaving sats on the table. New users that sign up to Fold are going to get 20,000 sats in a welcome bonus with their first gift card purchase. So don't leave sats on the table. Sign up now at foldapp.com/Marty. Get those 20,000 sats, freaks. Sup, freaks. This rip of TFTC was brought to you by our good friends at BitKey. BitKey makes Bitcoin easy to use and hard to lose. It is a hardware wallet that natively embeds into a 2 or 3 multi-sig. You have one key on the hardware wallet, one key on your mobile device, and Block stores a key in the cloud for you. This is an incredible hardware device for your friends and family, or maybe yourself, who have Bitcoin on exchanges and have for a long time, but haven't taken the step to self-custody because they're worried about the complications of setting up a private public key pair, securing that seed phrase, setting up a PIN, setting up a passphrase. Again, BitKey makes it easy to use, hard to lose. It's the easiest 0-to-1 step, your first step to self-custody. If you have friends and family on the exchanges who haven't moved it off, tell them to pick up a BitKey. Go to bitkey.world, use the key TFTC20 at checkout for 20% off your order. That's bitkey.world, code TFTC20.
And I mean, the macro tailwind's going to be more beneficial for just Bitcoin broadly and MicroStrategy specifically. I mean, just the news over the last 5 days with DeepSeek sending a shot across the bow of the whole artificial intelligence complex. And I think if there is validity behind what DeepSeek is offering and what's being marketed is true, and you have the ability to get OpenAI Anthropic like results with an LLM that is 95% less than the price that they're the capital that they're putting in to get the same results, that could be extremely disruptive for that whole complex. And more importantly, I think it's really going to force people to grapple with the question, like, what is my hurdle rate? How am I allocating capital? And I think if people are doing their jobs at the board level and in Silicon Valley, they're really going to have a come to Jesus moment. Like, we need to pair all this risk that we're taking with a hard asset. Like, Bitcoin treasuries are something that are going to be a superpower for companies that have them. Because if you do have this incredibly deflationary pressure of AI, particularly open source AI coming to market in mass, there's been a ton of capital allocated to that that could be completely wiped out, and you're going to need,
right?
I think people are going to realize you need to pair this deflationary tech trend that we're seeing with the deflationary money in Bitcoin. And that's just an external positive tailwind for Bitcoin and MicroStrategy by extension.
Right. Yeah. Man, this weekend has been just full of reading the news and trying to understand kind of where this goes. It's been just trying to put this into perspective, like NVIDIA lost $500 billion in market cap today. So far, and that's like 6 MicroStrategies. when you zoom out and you think about the scale, and I mean, I'm often thinking in my existing career as a reinsurance broker, thinking about the infrastructure of insurance companies and how they work, and this kind of deflationary component, inflationary and deflationary component, and I think a lot of that market, the insurance market, is completely blind to what's going on in this kind of crypto landscape and AI landscape at the moment, just because the regulatory environment and the rating agency environment provides these roadblocks, so you can't dip into these other types of assets. And I think it will be very disruptive once those kind of roadblocks are removed. And I think we could see that from this, you know, administration and the macro tailwinds moving forward. That's going to change how everybody thinks about capital completely. It's going to completely change how everybody thinks about capital. Like, we're going to see different designs of insurance companies that have never existed before. We're going to see different products that have never existed before. And they're all going to be leaning into these types of issues.
Yeah, that was, did you read Ross Stevens' annual letter from Stonehenge?
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. Talk about a very in-depth read. I'm very intrigued by Ross Stevens' letter. I've got a bunch of research kind of laid out. I plan on walking through it a bit more in depth, but yeah, it's dense, very dense. Well, there's so much opportunity in that space.
Well, yeah, that's the reason I bring it up. It seems like he's glued in on, and NYDIG and StoneRidge have glued on this intersection of Bitcoin and the insurance market, which makes a lot of sense. Bitcoin as an asset seems like it is the perfect asset to be paired with insurance.
Yeah, 100%. It needs to be paired with insurance, and yet none of these insurance companies can hold it. But you know what they can hold? They can hold MicroStrategy equity. They can hold convertible debt of any type. They can hold convertible debt ETFs. They can hold all these other products and leverage against it. But how an insurance company works is you're matching assets to your future liabilities. And those liabilities have different durations, right? So you have property's got a short duration, but then you've got casualty, workers' comp, life insurance that all has long tail duration. And if you're thinking about, if you just reframe how you see Bitcoin and you think about it in 4 or 8 year periods, longer term horizons, you can start to match that asset to a longer term horizon duration. And it may not be, you know, 1-to-1, maybe it's 5% Bitcoin and, you know, 95% these other products to match that duration horizon. But and I think that's exactly what Longtail Re is doing via StoneRidge. I think they're posting collateral. I'm still trying to figure out exactly how they're doing it. I think they're posting non-crypto collateral in reinsurance transactions and holding crypto as a balance sheet asset behind the scenes. And because they're a reinsurer, not an insurance company, they have less regulatory shields. Or less regulatory hurdles that they have to, you know, work through. So they have some flexibility in how they manage their capital from that perspective.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of insurance companies that don't have or do have those hurdles in place, that was a really interesting sort of headline when it happened when Allianz bought, what did they buy, 25% of that total convertible note offering?
Yeah.
So that's a direct signal that the insurance companies are paying attention. And they get it, and they're going to get exposure via the avenues available to them.
Yeah, it's a complete no-brainer, in my opinion, is at least adding some of this convertible debt to your balance sheet, right? Like, insurance companies subscribe to Markowitz Modern Portfolio Theory. Markowitz Modern Portfolio Theory being the theory, the mathematical concept of diversification, right? If you have a portfolio of diverse assets, if you add a new asset with different risk-return metrics to that portfolio of assets, it improves the return and reduces the risk of the entire portfolio. And now you're these insurance companies aren't acting on these new assets, and so they're leaving risk and return on the table. Reduced risk and increased return on the table. They're leaving it.
Yeah.
So huge opportunity.
How big? Well, when you say huge opportunity, what have you run the numbers on the amount of capital?
Slightly. Yeah. So there's about $800 billion of reinsurance capital in the market, in the reinsurance market. And I want to say there's like $7 trillion of insurance capital in the market. So $7 trillion marketplace, or about $8 trillion marketplace. And that's capacity. And I think assets held is probably something potentially larger than that, you know? So that's kind of a little bit of size and scale. And the insurance and the reinsurance world is just a, you know, small portion of the total, like, you know, financial landscape. But it's a, in my opinion, it's a no-brainer location to add these assets to these balance sheets to think about, you know, structure and future liabilities.
Yeah.
One example I like to think about is like workers' compensation claims, right? Long-term liabilities or long-tail liabilities. Let's say you have a worker that falls off a roof and is like paralyzed. The insurance company is going to be paying out claims for until that person dies, pretty much. So you might be paying out claims for 25 years. And the insurance companies have to make an assumption on that cost of that claim for the next 25 years. And they have to set up finances to finance that claim for the next 25 years. So if your expectations of inflation or debasement are wrong, your entire, that market is eviscerated. That long tail market is just totally eviscerated because all of your understanding and your assumptions on claims size is just completely wrong. And I think that if inflation comes back stronger, or we see another inflationary period, let's say 26 or 27, some of that long tail lines casualty market, I think, can have a really tough time because your ability to underwrite those claims is significantly hampered. Unless you have an asset that captures that, the opposite side of that trade.
Yeah. And that's just one example. Like, as you're mentioning that, I'm thinking about real estate too. I mean, obviously the LA fires have that front in mind for everyone in the last month at least, but you think about underwriting real estate insurance, and that is like real estate, just simply due to the fact that it's an asset that people use as a store of value. If people are funneling money into real estate and the value of each property is going up over time because it's being used as a store of value, it's just going to increase the potential payouts they have to make in the future if anything happens to any individual property or properties at once due to natural disasters like a fire, a hurricane, yeah, whatever. Then you go to healthcare and you think about how woefully unhealthy American society is and the rates of juvenile diabetes and obesity hitting the rates they are. And you think about the cost of just health insurance payouts into the future. The trend is not good. Hopefully MAHA can help change it, but you can easily just sit back and run through three or four pretty massive problems that the insurance industry is going to have in the next two decades in many, yeah, different areas of life.
Yeah. And one thing that I've seen just in my career working in reinsurance. So when I first started working in reinsurance, the market was incredibly soft. So like 2010s, the market for reinsurance was incredibly soft because there weren't many hurricanes, right? After Katrina, Rita, Wilma in 04, 05, there was largely like no large catastrophic events. And then 2017 happened, and then you started having large wildfires, large hurricanes. You got Hurricane Irma, Hurricane Ian, Paradise wildfire, large hailstorms in the Midwest. And the market effectively like flipped really, really quickly. And, you know, during the period of 2010s, you saw like technology start to come into the insurance landscape. You started to see like Progressive and Allstate and Nationwide all using technology, which was just bringing rates down. And they were stealing business from these smaller entities that didn't have the access to that technology. So insurance got really cheap during the 2010s, like really cheap because of all of the things that were going on. And that shifted in 17, 18, 19. And all of a sudden, the insurance companies realized that they're underpriced pretty significantly on the insurance. And so we've seen the price of insurance increase significantly greater than CPI over the last 5 years because it was largely underpriced during the entire 2010s. But you also have this like double whammy inflationary component, like you mentioned, where, you know, cost of homes is going up, cost of rebuilding is going up, cost of materials is up. All of this stuff is up significantly greater than CPI. And it's kind of filtering its way all the way through the insurance market, the reinsurance market, and even the retro reinsurance market, which sits above the reinsurance market. So, yeah, I mean, the dynamic over the last 5 to 7 years has been incredibly interesting to watch it play out. And I think it's going to get a lot trickier the next couple of years. Everybody that's seen the cost of their homeowners insurance go up, I would suspect it's probably going to keep going up, in the near term.
This rip was brought to you by our great friends at Unchained. As Bitcoin's role in the global financial landscape evolves, understanding its potential impact on your wealth becomes increasingly crucial. Whether we see measured adoption or accelerated hyper-Bitcoinization, being prepared for various scenarios can make the difference between merely participating and truly optimizing your position. This is important, freaks. This is why Unchained developed the Bitcoin Calculator, a sophisticated modeling tool that helps you visualize and prepare for multiple Bitcoin futures. Beyond traditional retirement planning, it offers deep insights into how different adoption scenarios could transform your wealth trajectory. What sets this tool apart is the integration with the Unchained IRA, the only solution that combines the tax advantages of a retirement account with the security of self-custody. In any future state, maintaining direct control of your keys remains fundamental to your Bitcoin strategy. Go explore the potential futures at unchained.com/TFTC. Bitcoin is going up. Make sure you're protecting it the right way. Make sure you have a good partner. That is Unchained. Go to unchained.com/TFTC.
So do you think companies that move first, like Allianz, are going to have a competitive advantage?
that's an interesting question, because you look at Allianz. Allianz is the largest insurance company in the world by assets under management. And you look at the scale of this purchase that they have relative to their entire investment portfolio, and it's like 0.00125%, right? It's incredibly small. I think that they may have a little bit of a head start, but where I think companies can make a bigger impact is if you're a smaller entity right now and you make a little bit of a larger, you dip your toe in a little bit bigger than Allianz has, it's going to have a larger impact in your ability to underwrite more deals and underwrite more business into the future and into perpetuity. So I think like any small, young tech enabled insurance carrier that's holding this stuff on their balance sheet is going to see much more opportunity than, a behemoth like Allianz.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Right. Like I think, Bitcoin is like, as we've seen in the public markets, it's kind of like this jolt to your equity, right? We've seen it provide this, volatility to your equity, which can be really favorable. One, if you announce that you're running a Bitcoin treasury strategy, you have people that are going to be buying your equity just because you're running a Bitcoin treasury strategy and they want to buy anything that touches it. Two, you now have ETFs where if you hold more than 1,000 Bitcoin on your balance sheet, you're automatically getting included in these ETFs. So you've got increased liquidity from that perspective. There's obviously been attention from the convertible bond market. If you want to add more Bitcoin to your balance sheet, you could go tap these convertible bond markets. We've seen equities like SMLR, Semler Scientific, Mara, even Core Materials, that mining company, are all tapping these debt markets to add more Bitcoin to their balance sheet. And your access to capital pools are just significantly greater. And if you're a billion-dollar company, $2, $3, $4, $5 billion company, and you're just kind of struggling to get by and you need capital, this has to be one of the decisions that you consider. Right? Like adopting some sort of Bitcoin strategy has to be a decision that you consider, because your alternative is, okay, well, if I go raise debt, if I go get debt from traditional capital markets, I may pay, 10, 12, 15% to borrow $25 million. And if my cash flow, that's a much different value proposition than potentially getting this jolt from adding Bitcoin to your balance sheet.
Yeah, this brings us back to MicroStrategy and misconceptions around the strategy, the convertible note strategy, particularly. And so if you hear, it's fascinating hearing Jason Calacanis run around and saying they're levered to the hills, the Bitcoin price is going to fall, the stock price is going to fall, they're going to get margin called. And it's like, you're in Silicon Valley, you're an investor, you should understand the concept of convertible notes and convertible debt. Like, it literally at some point converts into equity. So as your stock price is going up, you're essentially deleveraging at particular points on the price chart. And it seems like whether it's a true misunderstanding or an intentional misconstruing of what's actually happening, I think many people, many detractors, again, either misunderstand or misconstruing how levered MicroStrategy actually is.
Yeah, it's really curious, isn't it? the math is very simple. One, the debt isn't secured, so there is no margin call. Right, there is no margin call number. Right, if Bitcoin goes down to $5,000, there isn't a margin call. Like the debt would expire based on the period of time and how much they owe on the principal, and it's not tied to the Bitcoin at all. And just to put this in perspective, I think as of today, with MicroStrategy having $45 billion of Bitcoin and just assuming they have $6.5 billion of debt, let's just call all of their existing convertible debt, the price of Bitcoin would need to fall to $13,840 in order for the assets to be worth less than the debt. And that's just an interesting number to keep in mind where you can start to think about, how leveraged is this company. And it seems very under-leveraged relative to many other companies in the market. I mean, obviously Bitcoin is volatile, but you can compare them to any other tech company that may be significantly more levered, 80, 90, 100, 120% levered based on their structure of their corporation. So yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
It really is. It's almost like they're pissed off. It's like they hate the trade because they're scared, not in on it.
Yeah, pissed off, scared, nervous, don't want to see something blow up and take down the rest of the market or impacting their trades. Yeah, it's confusing.
Yeah, well, and the other aspect of what MicroStrategy is doing that is underappreciated too is the duration with which they're issuing these convertible notes. Like, you're baking in exposure to at least a 4-year cycle. And if, who knows, history or past performance is not indicative of future results. But I think if you run with the assumption that Bitcoin adoption is going to continue and there will only ever be 21 million Bitcoin, and as the market becomes more convinced that Bitcoin is the thing that's here to stay, the risk-adjusted potential for getting in the market at any given point in time in the future is lower than it was in the past, then it's a safe bet to make. And if you're able to issue these notes via durations that capture a full 4-year cycle, it seems pretty de-risked to me.
Yeah. If you look at the 4-year history of Bitcoin, the worst performing 4-year history, if you bought at the worst possible time, though, it's like 22.6% compound annual growth rate for Bitcoin. And now we're in a new paradigm shift where you have these other corporations that are also running this strategy and they're leaning into the same exact thing. Like, this is 4-year plus horizon. You look at the macro landscape, you look at government debt, you look at, having a hard asset that doesn't have significant drag. This is a no-brainer, a place for where you park capital to minimize capital drag, tax implications, all of those things, you name it. Plus the technological potential of the future of leveraging this capital as collateral is astronomical, right? Like, you not having to sell your Bitcoin and using this capital as collateral in the future is a incredibly undervalued component by the market. And I think, a small number of people are waking up to that kind of every day.
So how undervalued do you think MicroStrategy is right now? and I guess the other question with this preferred stock offering too is, what net effect does it have on common shares? So my assumption is that since they're able to offer this preferred stock vehicle, there will be demand for that, I assume there will be demand for that, so they'll take capital. I guess people would buy common shares because they're assuming there's going to be demand for that, which would be an influx of cash that will then be used to buy more Bitcoin.
Right. It kind of all compounds on itself. If there is demand for the preferred stock, that means that there should be more demand for the common stock, right? Because they're getting capital in a different vehicle, and they're adding all that capital raised from that different vehicle is going to go to, permanent capital held on the balance sheet, which just makes the ability to leverage the balance sheet even greater. So yeah, I personally think MicroStrategy will hit $1 trillion in 2025 or 2026 in total market cap value, but it's, I have no idea what the price may be, right? Because there's this dilution component of, how many shares are trading at any one given time. And Sailor has created a very volatile stock, again, by design, and creating chaos in the entire system that will, you know, create the, we're going to see amplitudes get even larger. I think we'll see higher spikes and lower and higher lows. And we're going to see the amplitude just kind of get greater and greater over time. That's kind of my thesis in how the stock moves, because as it thrusts up into new pricing territory, as you see price discovery to the upside, you see people completely shift their entire trading strategy and go the opposite direction, almost exacerbating the volatility of the equity itself. So yeah, it's incredibly tricky to time. I think the one thing that I have certainty in saying is that it's going to be more volatile. Like, we are going to see much more volatile periods in 2025, both upside and downside.
And is that animal spirits, or do you think it's arb traders coming in and recognizing that they can create the volatility themselves? And the combination of them and MicroStrategy.
That's a great question. I mean, there's so many players in the game, right? It's not just arb traders, right? You've got retail, you've got hedge fund longs that are never selling. You've got ETFs coming into play. As the market cap rises, they're getting included in more and more market cap weighted index ETFs. You've got FASB fair value accounting being adopted here in Q1 2025, in which case, if the price of Bitcoin is above $93,000, they have positive earnings in 2025, which would make them potentially qualified for the S&P 500, which would bring even more capital into the marketplace and just continue this chaos in my mind of who's trading on the deal. And some crazy statistic, it's, I think, like 75 or 80% of the equity market is automated or algorithmic. And so it's really computers that are going back and forth against each other on all of these different trades. And people are setting up different algos to trade on top of MicroStrategy based on certain assumptions. And we're going to see even more and more of that as people start to understand it. And, you know, I'm even talking with people on how to set up algos that have a different strategy based on, you know, certain long-term theses, right? So you got people betting short-term, you got people betting medium-term, you got people betting long-term, you've got people betting indefinitely. There's just so many people trading the stock. It's just, and there's going to be more, there's going to be more people trading the stock as we go into 2025 and 2026. Just look at, like, even Google search trends. Nobody really knows about MicroStrategy. I bring up MicroStrategy at work and it's like people laugh at me. Nobody knows this is going on. It's like, this company is holding $50 billion of Bitcoin. Like, this is worth more than most insurance companies, like in the entire insurance market. Like, this is an interesting story. You should probably know what's going on here. And so many people are just kind of blind to it, which is totally fascinating. And I think that will change in 25. I think that will change with FASB fair value accounting, you know, stock screeners with positive earnings. MicroStrategy is going to be included in it. Algorithms that are trading based on PE ratio, that's going to start being included in those algorithms. Potential inclusion in S&P 500, that will draw significant speculation in both directions. And I think Saylor also said it himself, anybody that's short MicroStrategy is a future buyer of MicroStrategy stock. You have to buy the stock to close the position. And so I think we see these like expansion contraction periods with shares that are available and tradable at the margin, where it goes wider and narrower and wider and narrower, which just draws significant amplitude in potential stock price.
It's such a fascinating story.
Yeah.
It's what I like about it is just like it's a hated trade by the right. It's hated by the right people.
It is. This will be the most hated rally of all time. I've said that a bunch of times. This will be the most hated trade of the decade. Yeah. Because people just don't understand it, can't comprehend it, and are significantly undervaluing Bitcoin as a technology.
It's almost too
dumb of a strategy for people to just like, you can't just buy Bitcoin and and have this happen.
Yeah, exactly. Too dumb of a strategy. Yeah.
But yeah. That's what they'll say on the surface. But as we've been discussing over the better course of an hour now, is they are thinking about this very strategically. And that is like the, that is one been the most impressive thing. It's almost like just watching MicroStrategy's foray going back to 2021 when they first got in. It almost is as if, and probably is the case, but I think it became obvious to me at some point last year that internally they had a, oh my God moment. Like, look what we can do. And like, just got smarter on convertible notes and how they tap public markets, public capital markets, and have really backed into the weaponization of MSTR to accumulate more Bitcoin and create this flywheel.
Absolutely. And a lot of people are really hung up on this like bear market perspective. Like, okay, if Bitcoin goes into a bear market, MicroStrategy's price is going to go down more than Bitcoin price. And I think that might be right. However, they're using past performance as a future indicator, right? So you're looking at the past bear market in 21, 22, looking at how MicroStrategy was impacted. But at that point, MicroStrategy was, you know, underwater on the debt that they held and the assets that they held on their balance sheet. And now if you fast forward to a future, let's say 26 or 27, MicroStrategy could be in strength and have the ability to continue to tap these capital markets and effectively buy Bitcoin when it is in a bearish sentiment. And managing this leverage ratio is incredibly important, in my opinion, to mitigate this kind of long-term future. And the having strength in a bear market would be incredibly powerful.
Well, and what you just described is another case for the naysayers are wrong. Like, they're like, what happens when Bitcoin goes in the bear market? It's like, we literally just had an example of it in 22 and 23. They survived. And they're buying
they survived.
Bitcoin.
And now they're five times as strong. Right? Now they're five times as strong, and you think it's going to do worse. And right? I think there are many, many use cases, I think, where MicroStrategy can be powerful and strong in a bear market. Again, if there's any premium in the equity of the stock, right, as a function of the underlying Bitcoin holdings, you can utilize that premium to buy additional Bitcoin in perpetuity, let alone tapping additional capital markets, using Bitcoin as collateral, convertible debt or future debt instruments that are yet to be created, preferred stock, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's just going to keep going.
Can MicroStrategy accumulate too much Bitcoin?
That's a great question.
That's too. Something people worry about.
Yeah. It's a good question. I mean, right. What they've got 2.5% of Bitcoin supply. And I mean, my forecast of how much Bitcoin they have at the end of 2025 is somewhere in the realm of 700,000-800,000, almost doubling what they've got now. And that would put them around 5%, 6%. It's a tough question to answer, right? I don't know. What are your thoughts?
No. It's just the...
Can they have too much Bitcoin?
Like, I think the big question is like, does MicroStrategy having this much Bitcoin create a systemic risk for the broader Bitcoin market? Because God forbid at some point in the future, they're forced to sell. Who knows what would lead to that outcome? Is the government going to go and say, we don't like this? I don't think that's going to happen under a Trump administration, but who knows what happens down the line?
Where else would you go? Where else would you park your capital? Would you rather have a company that holds this much Bitcoin, or would you go use another crypto exchange that is potentially less centralized because MicroStrategy has 6% of the Bitcoin holding available. That's a tricky question. It's sovereign power, right? Bitcoin is sovereign. It's MicroStrategy would have this power that is kind of beyond government, which might scare some people. I guess it kind of depends on who's running the entity, how the entity is run and designed, what kind of products it's designed. Yeah.
I mean,
it's a tricky question.
It is a tricky question. My base case is that if MicroStrategy is going to leak Bitcoin from their treasury, it's going to be because they take risk with it eventually and just lose it, which is fine, in my opinion. And I think we're in chapter one of the long-term MicroStrategy story. I think Saylor has choreographed this in public statements and podcasts and presentations. Like, they're in the accumulation phase now, but at some point Bitcoin adoption will become saturated, and the CAGR of the purchasing power of Bitcoin year on year will fall to a much smaller rate, at which point it would make sense to use that Bitcoin to do things like go back to insurance. They're gonna have a butt ton of insurance.
Yeah.
And imagine being able to offer Bitcoin backed insurance 1-to-1. And if MicroStrategy wanted to increase revenues, they'd put a pile of their Bitcoin into one of these Bitcoin backed insurance products and reap the premium yield.
Yeah, so that was exactly what I wrote down on my page here is products, like insurance and banking solutions. And I think in a more Bitcoin denominated future, if MicroStrategy is able to offer products to the market that are really lucrative, whether that be insurance or banking or mortgage or, you know, whatever that may be, I don't think people are going to complain that they have a lot of Bitcoin if the products are more lucrative than what other financial institutions are able to provide in a fiat denominated ecosystem. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of work that needs to be done in the next decade. I totally agree with you that this is chapter one of the MicroStrategy story. I think it's accumulate as much Bitcoin as humanly possible for the next 8 to 10 years and develop the Bitcoin ecosystem and the financial framework and the economy around Bitcoin over the same time horizon as well, because as that develops, the utility value of holding the Bitcoin continues to increase as well, which shifts more people into the ecosystem. Yeah, it's a great question, but I think MicroStrategy's ability to accumulate Bitcoin is going to reduce over time, just because of the 21 million supply cap and their ability to accumulate more Bitcoin. If other companies start seeing this opportunity and adopting the strategy, their ability to accumulate as much is going to be reduced over time as well. So I think there is like a terminal velocity potential here.
Well, that brings up another incredible question. I go back and forth. Like, does the 2.5% of the overall supply that MicroStrategy has now, does that provide an economies of scale advantage when other companies begin doing something similar? Like, is MicroStrategy viewed in the realm of capital markets that are allocating to these products, whether it be convertible notes or preferred stock, as the lowest risk with the best risk adjusted return? Like, is it less risky to allocate to MicroStrategy because they've proven they can do this successfully and they have the most Bitcoin? Like, is there a winner takes most, winner takes yeah. all of these debt markets? I don't know.
Yeah. That is a good question. I think their financial moat is enormous, right? I don't think there's any part of my thesis on why I think they're going to a trillion this year is I don't think there's any company that catches them or comes even close to catching them in terms of total Bitcoin holdings held on balance sheet. I think there's only four or five companies that have cash on hand to buy as much Bitcoin as they have right now, and they would have to start yesterday, right, in order to catch them. And it's basically the Mag 7, and they would have to completely change their entire business model in order to do that and convince their board. And the only company that I think that could catch them is Meta, because Zuckerberg has more than 50% voting rights. So he could theoretically do that and put that much Bitcoin on the balance sheet. But even then, you'd have a social media company that holds Bitcoin as opposed to just a Bitcoin company. But to your question on this kind of winner take all and the debt markets and how that framework works, I actually am going to take a little bit of the contrary position that these capital markets are going to be looking for diversification in this Bitcoin space. And I think they're probably hungry for it. So these products that are being developed and sent out to market, where you're seeing these combined convertible bond ETF products, I think those are going to start getting really popular, because the capital then has access to multiple different sectors that have Bitcoin on their balance sheet, right? So you're going to have like healthcare, mining, Bitcoin and consumer products, and like all of these other companies and institutions that are running the same strategy are going to have different exposures to different sectors. So it gives you kind of this even cleaner, more diversified, risk-adjusted return on a combined basis.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, that it makes a lot of sense to me too. And going back, that's, I think a lot of people, particularly in Bitcoin, really have not grasp the fact that there are large pools of capital out there that have mandates to allocate to certain products, sectors, whatever it may be. And whether you think it's just better to buy Bitcoin, spot Bitcoin, hold it in cold storage, as opposed to any of these other things, it doesn't matter. Like, the capital has a mandate to go somewhere, and it's got to go through these avenues. And yeah, it's good for Bitcoin at the end of the day, because the money ultimately falls into Bitcoin. I had a conversation with Nick Bhatia at the beginning of the year that even blew my mind even more. For the longest time, many Bitcoiners, myself included, thought there was going to be this rotation of capital out of other assets and into Bitcoin. But Nick, being the bond trader that he is and understanding these markets and diving into the convertible debt offerings of MicroStrategy, had the unlock, like, oh, wait, this capital's not rotating. There's credit creation.
Yeah, it's credit creation
that's going into Bitcoin, which is insane. Like, that just completely expands the amount of capital that can come in.
I was listening to that podcast and I was making dinner, and I dropped everything I was doing, and I sat down, and my wife's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "This, I need to listen to this again, and I need to focus on it." Because, yeah, I mean, that was a fascinating little nugget there too. Yeah, absolutely.
And they're literally going to print dollars to go into these products. Not print. Yeah. The banks will issue credit to essentially print money.
That's exactly how it would work in insurance as well. Because if you add Bitcoin on your balance sheet or Bitcoin correlated products, your ability to lever increases. So it's kind of a similar design and situation in the insurance marketplace as well. It's just a little different, because as the value of the underlying product increases, your ability to lever against it also increases. So Bitcoin's effectively eating TradFi from the inside out, and nobody really knows about it. it's just starting from the inside, and it's going to eat its way out.
And it's another thing Bitcoin has been saying for a while. It's like, Bitcoin just incentivizes greed in the best way possible, because it's net positive for anybody that holds Bitcoin. And even if you don't hold Bitcoin, it's going to be good for society because we have better money. But that's what the incentives of Bitcoin have been weaponized and recognized by TradFi. And the results speak for themselves. Like, to think that this is going to stop is insane, because all these traders, all these funds, all these capital allocators have benchmarks to hit and hopefully surpass. And the dynamics that are played, if you tap into these markets, you're almost guaranteed to outperform the benchmark. And that's just going to feed on itself.
Yeah. I mean, think about everybody that bought these convertible bonds from MicroStrategy, and they just outperformed the entire market by 10x, and then they outperformed Bitcoin and all this other stuff. That money is not going to leave this trade. Right, like when the debt is converted to equity, they're going to sign up for the next one. They're right back at the table. Like, let's do it again. And I don't think people really recognize that, right? Like, as soon as this is converted, they're going to sign up and want to do that exact same trade and let's run it back, right? We're going to do this again. Additionally, I think some of the, like, the convertible debt that they've issued so far has been private, unrated convertible debt on a company with negative earnings, technical negative earnings. And now fast forward to a future where you've got FASB fair value accounting, and they could mark their Bitcoin to market. They've got positive earnings, potential to get the debt that they're providing rated, and they go tap public and private markets. I think their ability to raise capital in that debt market is going to increase substantially. And I think the market is under appreciating how deep those pools of capital may be. And you think about, well, MicroStrategy's a large portion of the existing convertible debt market. Yes, but we're going to see, like, as you mentioned, kind of this credit creation and expansion of this convertible debt market. And we might even see folks roll out of traditional existing debt into this convertible debt because it is more lucrative. Just kind of depends on the mandates on people's equity or the, you know, asset portfolios and what they're holding.
Yeah, it feels like we've crossed the event horizon and only a few of us recognize it.
Yeah, it's going to keep going. Yeah.
And when you think about corporate debt, like, what are your other options? Like, the options are dog shit. The corporate debt market literally needed a bailout during 2020.
Yeah.
Who's providing better options these days outside of blue chips? And even those, as we've seen today, are not as ironclad as many people thought just 12 hours ago.
And man, we're going to see just new products galore out of this stuff too. Like, this, I mean, the preferred stock is a great example of it, but I can almost guarantee we're going to see, you know, 3, 4, 5 different ways to also begin to monetize this in different capital environments from different companies, right? Like, MicroStrategy is definitely innovating. They're innovating right now, but so are other corporations. And other corporations are going to rethink exactly how to tap these capital pools and structure and design different products for them in different ways. And they're all going to be lucrative in just different functions and formats.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Metaplanet and the vehicles that they were tapping into last year, which in Japanese equity markets, many of them were typically like a desperation sort of vehicles that you would tap into if you're like on the verge of bankruptcy, but they simply just weaponized those offerings to raise cash to buy more Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And they were the best performing stock, I think, globally last year.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's the future for Bitcoin as capital is incredibly exciting. And yeah, there's so much opportunity for all companies of all shapes and sizes to start running their own innovative strategy to tap these different capital pools and access different capital.
And that's another thing I think people are really underappreciating right now, is that as these new products come to market, as you have people in public equities markets, particularly copying MicroStrategy, innovating on the strategy, I don't think we've ever seen demand of this magnitude with the intent purpose of buying Bitcoin and keeping it off the market for decades, arguably. Like, I don't think
forever. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's permanent capital.
Yeah.
And then capital.
Then on the private side, we're seeing the duration curve get built out. We were off air mentioning Battery. I mean, like, what they're doing with the structured credit, pairing Bitcoin with traditionally financeable assets like commercial real estate assets and taking that off the market for 10 years, 30 years, whatever it may be. I think you're beginning to see this duration curve build out for Bitcoin. And as that Bitcoin comes off the market and stays off the market, I mean, the float of what is actually tradable beyond that is going to get smaller and smaller, especially if this accelerates.
Right. And that's, I mean, the future of digital capital is being built on Bitcoin. It's not being built on these other coins. I mean, the other cryptocurrencies that exist in the market, I think we'll see some of these other cryptos exist for a long time. But if you're thinking about traditional financial ecosystems and how to infiltrate traditional financial ecosystems, it's institutional grade capital that's adopted by, you know, BlackRock and other large institutions. And you start thinking about repeal of SAB 121, banks potentially holding this as custody on banks being able to custody Bitcoin, and the future of creating new products like mortgage-backed products or HELOC products or Bitcoin line of credit products on this ecosystem is going to expand just super rapidly.
Do you think this throws a wrench in the 4-year cycle of Bitcoin?
Yeah, I do. I really do. My only caveat to that is if we see just a huge mania and like a massive blow off top, which is possible. I mean, the human, it's hard for humans to conceptualize some of this stuff. And I think we could see a significant, you know, blow off top and a regression to the mean. But I don't think we're going to see the drawdowns that we've seen historically, because there are going to be companies that are going to be in strength in a potential bear market.
Yeah. And I think it goes back to managing that leverage ratio and issuing these products at the right time and really managing your risk. And I think that's the other thing. The quality of people who really understand these markets and these products is unlike anything that's ever existed within Bitcoin as well.
Yeah.
These aren't stupid people.
No, and let's take a company example, and I'm just throwing this out there. Let's say Nike adopts a Bitcoin treasury strategy, but they only adopt 5% of their treasury, corporate treasury, to Bitcoin, because they're like, you know, we think we want to do this into the future. They put 5% of their balance sheet into Bitcoin, and their, you know, any excess profits that they've got over the next couple of years, they add 5% into Bitcoin. And now you see a significant blow off top where, you know, let's say it goes up to 1 million, drops to 500,000. They could have the ability to turn that lever, turn the dial up a little bit more, and go from 5% to 10%, 10% to 20%. And all of a sudden you may have a dozen, 10, 20, 50 companies that are interested in buying Bitcoin for the long-term horizon that are in strength, because they're operating in different sectors. They're not just 100% Bitcoin, but they're interested in adding Bitcoin to the balance sheet. And you're going to see capital strength buying Bitcoin in a potential bear market if there is a blow off top in, you know, 25, 26, or 27. And that's where I think there's going to be a cycle change. I don't think MicroStrategy is going to be able to hold this thing up itself, you know, going from like a million down to 500,000, but other corporations that are adopting this and taking a little bit of just kind of
a measured
approach. Yeah. Not like a, you know, all in day one, but a measured approach into the future, I think will be the ones that hold it up in a potential bear market.
Yeah. No, it's very exciting. How's all this been for you? I imagine it's been a crazy couple of years for you.
Yeah.
Looking at MicroStrategy and putting your thoughts out there and then watching it evolve.
Yeah. Thanks for asking. It has been totally insane. My wife is like, what is going on? No, it's really cool putting out a thesis and seeing it come to fruition. And the thesis that I had back in 2022, 2023 has even evolved significantly. I mean, I couldn't fathom or imagine that they were tapping these different capital markets, or that these capital markets really existed, and that that MicroStrategy could accumulate Bitcoin at this fast of a pace, and that their ability to use these capital markets has made me rethink and reframe my last decade of working in reinsurance and those capital markets to think about, okay, well, how can I do this in this space? you know, how can I do this in this capital market? And how would that work? What would that look like? And start to rethink the structure of just corporate finance completely with a Bitcoin balance sheet. And you start, once you kind of grasp it, it changes how you see the entire economy, how you see banks using interest rates, how you see line of credit, how you see how equity moves, how you see like the interplay between insurance and debt markets and political power and you know, regulatory and rating agency frameworks and all of this stuff, all of which the future Bitcoin economy and ecosystem needs. There's a lot of work to be done, and I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Well, it's been fun to watch from the sidelines, at least, because I remember your Lion Navy coming out with the thesis. I was like, oh, this is pretty interesting, and then watching it all play out as time has progressed, it's honestly insane. The MicroStrategy success. I was the first outside of Matt Walsh from Cash All Island Ventures to send a tweet out the day the Motley Fool basically released a little headline that MicroStrategy was accumulating Bitcoin. I was the first one. I wrote a Ben about it that day, and to see where it's come since then is insane.
Yeah. It's all financial strength. It's all a balance sheet strength and leveraging a balance sheet. And Saylor is 10 steps ahead and has asymmetric information, which just makes this incredibly exciting to think about, like, what's the next move? And the entire market's trying to think, what's the next move? And how big is the next move? How big is the ATM? How much Bitcoin have they bought? How do you value the company? I mean, this whole thing is going to change how the entire equity market works, because even MicroStrategy, when they adopt FASB fair value accounting, they're going to be the only company in the QQQ where you know what earnings is 24/7, 365. It should reduce earnings volatility. If there's any corporation that adopts a Bitcoin treasury strategy and is telling the market how much Bitcoin they have on their balance sheet every week, your earnings volatility of your corporation is totally eradicated. And your ability to tap capital markets should improve significantly because of that. But it may cause more volatility just in day-to-day movements. So yeah, I'm incredibly excited about the future.
I am as well. Thank you for coming on. And again, the timing was perfect. So
yeah,
this has been great. What,
I mean, I've got so much more to digest, right? Just reading about the preferred stock this morning. Yeah, I've got to work through this a bit. It just takes time.
Yeah, the way I read Dylan's thread from earlier this year, right before he came on, the way a perpetual call option that can be incredibly far out of the money, it seems to be like a nice little carrot to put in front of these types of capital.
Yeah, and more accretive and less dilutive than the bond market.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't even touch on Bitcoin yield, but we can end on this, is the concept of Bitcoin yield. And is that an indicator you follow closely? Because that's in my mind, like, the strategy is working as long as the Bitcoin per share is going up. If it were ever to fall, that's when you should start asking serious questions, be like, is this broken in any way? Or did they just make a bad strategic capital raise? When the stock was at a certain point, and Bitcoin was at another point.
That's a great question. I my brain is kind of split. I straddle this like Bitcoin world and traditional finance world. And it's like, for my personal balance sheet, I think in Bitcoin per share, but for how I analyze the equity, I know that, you know, 95% of the market doesn't care about that. You know, they're thinking in the traditional finance world. So I got to think about, what does the traditional finance world think about? What are they looking at? How are they looking at things? I think it'll be a valuable and important metric for Bitcoiners, and especially moving into a potential Bitcoin denominated future 5, 7, 10, 12 years from now. But, I mean, number go up is incredibly important too. So, you know, it's an exciting measure to watch personally, because your opportunity cost of capital is, I can hold this in this traditional financial, I could hold MicroStrategy in this traditional financial wrapper via equity, that's accreting Bitcoin. Or I could, you know, use this capital to buy Bitcoin over here where it's just not moving. Those both have different risk return metrics, different tax implications, different reasons for holding these different things in different vehicles. So it all kind of comes down to, in my opinion, like efficiency of the vehicles that you hold those products in, how much utility each one of those products has, and you know, what that may look like into the future, right? Because it's difficult to earn a yield on cold storage Bitcoin at the moment, but you can earn a yield on holding MicroStrategy equity via running covered call options, right? You can earn additional income off of holding MicroStrategy equity beyond accreting additional Bitcoin. So there's different utility amongst the different products as well. So I kind of view all of those different things in conjunction.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Fascinating time. And hopefully we can do this many more times in the future as the market evolves, new products come and copycats enter the market and Bitcoin goes crazy. Jeff, I'm excited for you. Thank you. Thank you for taking time. It's been fun to watch. And I only imagine it's going to get crazier, more chaotic, more volatile, which should be should be good for all of us.
Yeah, should be good for everybody. Appreciate it. Thanks for the time. You can find me on Twitter at Punter Jeff. We also run a weekly podcast every Wednesday. We call it MSTR True North. It's a group of people that have been involved in the MicroStrategy trade for a really long time, have a vested interest of being at the front end of what's going on with the equity. And it's an exciting podcast, and we chat for a couple hours every week. So
we will link to all that in the show notes. Until next time, peace and love, freaks.
Appreciate it.